AAC meeting, May 2nd, 2016.
Everything information in the Washington Post and in all the TV news stations that I saw. And so I was offended by that, because that was not why they stepped down. They have served their time and done a very good job, and I think we need to thank them.
Very good. We'll add that, Phil. I agree. Any other additions to the board report? Do I have a motion to approve the board report as amended? Thank you.
Sure.
All right. No more discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed and those abstaining. Thank you, Bill. Public comment period.
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair, I have two comments and one public comment here.
Okay. Let's see, who's our first public comment person?
Actually, there are four, but I have to hear two, and Ms. B is having the vote. All right. So the first person is Chris Burns.
Hi, my name is Chris Barnes, and I just want to make a statement. You're going to hear from some other public commenters, and I know amongst yourselves there's been a spirited discussion about the possibility of Uber and Lyft taking some Metro Access service, and there are certainly more experts than me on that topic, but I did want to remind both the committee and the staff. One way to reduce the demand on Metro Access is to fix your existing infrastructure, your fixed routes, rail and buses. That can have a dramatic effect on getting people using existing services. And specifically, I'm talking about rail in terms of right now at Fort Totten, the auto level is off on trains or the rail is not level. You have a gap like this. There's no way a wheelchair is getting over that platform. And that's just one of the many things. You have the 7,000 series announcements that have been brought up. You have the elevators being announced as you approach a station. There's all these little things, station lighting. All these little things add up to people taking Metro Access because fixed route is not accessible for them. So in this whole conversation, I want to encourage everyone to remember the importance of getting rail and bus accessible again, so that demand on Metro Access is further reduced. Thank you,
Chris. And I would just inform, thank you, Chris, that Chief Pavlik is here, and I'd like to have him come up next, and then we'll hopefully the other three public comments right after that. So we're going to jump to our Chief has another meeting he has to go to, but we want to rearrange the schedule so he can get to both meetings. Chief
Pavlik,
Public Safety Report, Metro Transit Police. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, good evening. As you said, my name is Ron Pavlik. I serve as the Chief of Police. I also brought with me Deputy Chief Kevin Gaddis, who runs our Patrol Operations Bureau. I also brought Deputy Chief Warren Donald, who runs our Administrative Services Bureau. Captain Pete Sepulveda, who runs our Homeland Security Bureau. And I think that's it. Yes. So I basically just want to come down here for the request and talk a little bit about crime. We had the recent two homicides at the Deanwood Metro Station that were definitely concerning to a lot of riders and a lot of our employees. One thing that we can say about some of the high-profile cases, namely the two Deanwood cases in particular, both were closed in less than 24 hours with arrest. One of the cases was appears to be a true random act of violence, while the other case was something that was going on for a long time in the neighborhood, and it just so happens those two individuals met up that day. Both violent crimes, obviously, ending in homicide with two 15-year-old individuals lost their lives. And we could look at it, how they occurred, when they occurred, time of day, all that good stuff. But truth be told, Deanwood is not even in the top 10 of our highest crime stations. The fact that they both happened at Deanwood happened to be a coincidence. There's no rhyme or reason to why they both happened at Deanwood. It was just a matter of the way things happened those two particular days. The perception of crime, that, and I think that's what it is, due to some high-profile events, that Metro is an unsafe place. I can tell you right now that the chances of you being a victim on Metro is 6 per million riders, 6 per million trips. When you look at the National Capital Region, the chance of being a victim in the National Capital Region is about 22 per 1,000 people. Our crime is so low that we have to do it per million, that if we use the same scale as the National Capital Region per 1,000, it would even show up on a bar graph. Our most those two crimes are theft of a bicycle and theft of a cell phone. Those are two highest occurring crimes in Metro. The bike theft is a property crime, something we take very serious. But when you look at crimes against people, it's usually stolen cell phones. That's the most crime against people. It's something we're actively addressing. When you look at the top 10 stations in as the highest crime station for the first quarter of 2016, 9 of the 10 are in the District of Columbia, spread out throughout the green and orange line, and then one in Prince George's County. When you look at crime against bus, our crime is even lower. We have about one crime per million riders. So bus crime is even lower than rail crime. Rail's average about 6 per million. That's what we do now. We take the rate, we take bus and rail, combine it together, overall ridership, and that's how we come up with a rate, about 6 crimes per million riders. When you look at our parking lot crime, you know, we're averaging still about a 10-year low. Our biggest is theft from auto, and that comes and goes and spikes and waves. But our parking lot low is relatively, continues to be relatively low overall. And a lot of that's owed to the auto industry. It's very hard to steal a car nowadays. Between the technology, smart keys, remote start, all the different things the auto industry has done, it's very hard to steal a car. You know, previously, probably say 5 to 10 years ago, we would average, you know, 80 to 100 cars stolen a year. I think last year we were in the 30s. So it just doesn't happen. The older cars are still being stolen, and most of it are being stolen from parts. But stealing a car is very hard to do, so we're continuing that campaign, just reminding our riders, just don't put anything in plain sight, because that's usually why they break the window, they steal something in plain sight. As far as crime on the rail, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the youth riding our system since the DC-1 card came out. That really is a misnomer. We don't have any data to support just because DC-1 cards have gone effective. You know, if you recall last year, they were bus. If you recall this year, they've been bus and rail. We're not showing any correlation to our crime increasing because of that. A lot of it's just bad publicity and a lot of misnomers out there. We're definitely challenging the young riders, more stations than others. Look at stations in close proximity, walking distance to measure stops. Definitely more challenging than other stations. Your high transfer stations, LaFont Plaza, the Gallery Place, definitely our target areas. And with those, you know, we saturate those stations, you know, on a daily basis during that height. One thing we did after the homicide, we started what we call a surge detail. And basically what we do, we take our day work shifts and hold them over into the evening hours. So we'll take an entire district day work shift. Normally it's all at 4 p.m. and we hold them over until 8 p.m. And that way we're basically doubling or tripling the size of our department during that peak time. Most of our crime occurs in the evening hours from about 3:30 to about 7 p.m. and then it dies down. And the park lot crime and bike crime is much harder to put a time frame on it because the victim will park the car or the bike during, you know, morning shift and then come back and even, so it's harder to really map that out. But with the rail crime and bus crime, it's much easier to do. We definitely rely on our CCTV system throughout the rail system. You know, we have thousands of cameras throughout. We have a new state-of-the-art command center out in Hyattsville, Maryland. You might have seen it in the media. I was actually out there this morning with Congressman Hoyer and showed it to him because it is a high profile, because he's some of these high profile crimes. So I'll quit talking and take any questions you all might have for me. Yes, sir.
Chief, I've got two questions.
Okay.
For a different take on safety. One of them is a request that this committee has made about the use of some of the platform cameras that you have on the platform. Certain jurisdictions, Boston being one of them, they can actually send the images from those cameras to the drivers in the trains. That gives them a view of what's happening at the doors.
Wow.
For safety, the accessibility group, during rush hour when there are large crowds, they can't normally see what's at the door, and we've had instances of people having their canes caught in the doors when the doors close, wheelchairs halfway in, halfway out. And so, we're requesting that the system look at the system elsewhere in Boston and see whether we can set that up here so that the drivers will have a good view of what's happening. As far as crime goes, one of the feedbacks we got were the cameras are being paid for on a grant from the feds and they don't want to use it for something other than Homeland Security. But basically, if somebody's being chased, it'd be nice if the driver could see somebody being chased and close the doors and keep them from getting out. So we can use it that way. But don't using the cameras for a safety issue, I think, would be really good.
Yeah, that's a misnomer. I'm not sure where that came from, but Although Homeland Security may have paid for some of our grants, there's no stipulations on how we use those cameras. Truth be told, we rely on those cameras every single day for our overcrowded platforms. You take an emergency incident like an arcing insulator, we're quickly asking what is crowds doing at Gallery, what are crowds doing at Bethesda. So we use the cameras all the time for safety. The second part of that also is in 2014, I went before our board of directors, and it's called MCACS, the Mailing Coordination Analysis Center, where now we're sharing our video with the entire region. So we are sharing our video every single day, and we'll continue to do that, and we don't use it just for security.
That'd be great. So if you can.
The train call, that's interesting. I didn't know. I would be concerned. I'd like to know the Boston model personally, so I'll have to research that. But my concern is I don't want to distract away from that train operator either. So I'd like to know how they have the monitor, how it feeds. You know, I have some concerns with that. And as you know, the 7000 series have cameras in that. We do not have the ability to tap into them remotely, but we do have the video, obviously, after the fact. So that's the next generation. Right now, we're testing cameras on buses, where we have the ability to tap into a bus live and see what's going on in the bus. The technology is just not there yet with the rail cars, and that's mostly because of the confines underground, all the cement, steel, and everything of that. But hopefully we'll be there one day.
That'd be great. The other thing was your pilot project that was carried on last year of flagging emergency exits.
Yes.
And again, we found a major issue with that because folks on the disability community do not have smart trip cards. So if there is an emergency, they're trapped. And I know we were told that in an emergency, the electricity goes off and immediately everything opens up. But there are some emergencies that don't involve the electricity going off, such as somebody with a knife or a gun chasing you.
Right, and as far as the, we know there's a lot of fraud going on with that. So, you know, Christian Kent and I talked about that, and we're actually working with the CFO's office. Is there an opportunity to do a smart chip card for different groups? You know, that's something we're still looking at. We're just not there yet. Because we know, unfortunately, sometimes, and I have actually a box room upstairs I could show you where cards have been manipulated, mostly with the escorts, not so much the other way around. So that's something we're looking at, because I agree with you, there's got to be a better way to do it, especially with technology now.
And I just think about the Federal Transit Association, they just found the blocked exit last week.
Yep.
And, you know, they come up here, and I showed your office a picture of one over here at the other place. Big sign, emergency exit, blocked.
Right. Oh, yeah,
that's
a problem.
But thank you.
Those
are
the
questions.
Okay. Good. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate that. Other questions?
I have a comment, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
And I'm just wondering, first of all, thank you for being here. And secondly, I'm just wondering, what is the policy or training or what you have in place for your staff when there is any situation with a person who has cognitive disabilities that are not visible very much, a person with autism or any other related disability, and how is the training, or there is any training already, how often do you train your staff? So these folks, if any situation can be approached appropriately and not go that far of us, we have seen in the news, for instance.
Yeah, it's called culture. We call it cultural diversity in law enforcement, and that's basically how you deal with different communities, different ethnicities, persons with disabilities, you name it. So each officer goes to a basic during their academy, and then depending on the state mandates, we're required by the state of Maryland and the Commonwealth of Virginia to do certain mandatory in-service retraining, and we'll do 2-hour refreshers. I want to say the last time we did it was probably 2014 or 2015. I'd have to get back to you, but every other year is when we usually do it. It's kind of like with our bloodborne pathogens and other things that are mandatory for law enforcement, AED, CPR, things like that. We do 2-hour refresher blocks.
Thank you.
Very good. Other questions?
Yes. You have stated that the crime and safety is low, the crime, but it seems like every morning when I get up, somebody's stabbed, somebody's robbed, somebody's hurt, somebody's shot, somebody's killed. We're just all of a sudden hearing so many reports, but you're saying that everything is down.
No, I'm not saying it's down. I think, again, it's a perception thing. Sometimes the media hypes it up. the truth be told, I would make, looking at hard numbers, you know, our crime, I say our crime, Metro crime, is much lower than what's going on around your top side. Metro's not immune to crime, obviously. You know, when you're moving as many people as we are, crime's going to happen. I think the two violent crimes that we talked about earlier, Deanwood, obviously those are attention getters, and homicides occurring on Metro were and have been an anomaly. You have to go back to, you know, last year, July 4th, we had a homicide. Then we had one at Woodley Park in 2013, and then after that, you would have to go back 7-8 years before you find another homicide that occurred at Metro. So unfortunately, some of the things that are happening in the neighborhood are still over the Metro rail system. But again, some of that is sensationalized by the media, but I would make the comparison. You know, we don't want, you know, one crime is one crime too many, but all those high-profile cases is through our CCTV system and through good police work and really tips from the community through our text tips and other ways to communicate with us that we've closed all those with custodial arrest. So when the events happen, that's one thing that I've been trying to stress and come up with a new public service message is, it's very likely that if you commit a crime on Metro, some one of our cameras picked you up, and then it's just a matter of time of finding you and having the community identify you or one of your, you know, colleagues. So those events have happened is something that we're working on diligently, and it's really how we're patrolling our resources. You know, how do we deploy our officers? You know, one other thing we're doing is we're changing our uniform because we have an opportunity there to be more visible. I've heard from this community as well as riders before that, you know, the lighting in our Metro system is not the best. We know that. So one thing to help combat that is have our officers being more visible. One way we're going to do that is change our uniform presence. So it's a layered approach. It's the CCTV system using technology. It's the text tips. It's the way we deploy our officers. It's the way we empower our first line, you know, employees, you know, our station manager, our train operator, our bus operators, and really the community groups like this being involved, whether it's Iraq, whether it's this group. The text tips that come in, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all, it's really a layered approach on how we address our security concerns here at Metro.
Very good. Other questions?
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up to Mrs. Rush's question, I'd like to request, maybe in our quarterly statistics report, we should have a column focusing on number of crimes that could be reported. To us, see, given it zero, we should know it. So some kind of a figure to be added into the statistical report that we have. Can you hear me? Is it okay?
So you're looking at, we report a crime on every quarter, and also we keep it on the Metro blog every day. So we have what we call the blotter report, and those are any significant events that occurred within the last 24 hours, which is on the internet. And then May 12th, I'll go before the board again and present the first quarter crime stats for 2016. So we do report to our board of directors every quarter, and I also post it on the internet every quarter as well as daily.
I'm talking about the AAC statistic report that we get quarterly, a monthly, I guess, monthly, okay, maybe something.
Yeah, I mean, we can get it to you. It's available.
Why can't you just add that to it? Why can't you get it to our report? That's what I'm saying. Because you know, report is available. That's what I'm saying.
Mr. Chairman. Go ahead.
I have a question. I guess it's kind of a softball question because one of the things that everybody's interested in regarding Metro is the interaction between the passengers and the Metro employees. And I'm just wondering, can you describe, if you have any experience with that, what the average interaction between a Metro police officer is and the average person in the public?
I apologize, I'm not clear on the question. I mean, how often we interact with the public, or?
Well, you know, you have a kind of, what kind of incidents usually happen where the police become involved with
a
person, hopefully not always
correct. No, I mean, it could be a crowd issue. It could be, you know, believe it or not, we are ambassadors to the city, and you know, a lot of direction questions. You know, what stop do I get off to get closest to the zoo or the National Mall, or, you know, a lot of questions are given each and every day. Then your riders who lose something, you know, what are the lost and found procedures, or how do I find something that I lost on the train or left on the train? Then those who are a victim of crimes, no two ways about that, obviously. But a lot of direction. haven't given them, truth be told, a lot of, you know, just serving the public, hey, or why is the train late? The bid says, you know, the next train's here in 10 minutes, but it's not here, you know. So a lot of customer service, and that's something we need to get better at. You know, since we are a customer service-oriented agency, and really being law enforcement is one of our primary roles, especially policing the transit environment. It's not like a traditional county police officer, city police officer, but policing the transit environment is much more in your face, you know, interacting with the public. And it's important that our officers use, obviously, good manners. You know, I hate seeing that rude and discourteous behavior. You know, what does that look like? Well, you know what it is when you see it. There's no two ways about it. But how can we be better stewards to our riders, whether, you know, regardless of what community they represent?
Great. Tony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, Chief. Out of curiosity, I found out through my three-year-old that there are buttons on trains you can push to call the driver. And, you know, in a sense of knowing discretion, because we hear the announcements all the time, we see something, say something, and the role that the riders play in sort of deterring crime and things like that. So there's the buttons on the trains, there's the emergency numbers that we hear over the announcements, you mentioned texts. What is your sense of discretion in ways that, that those of us riding can use, and when should we use those? If we hit that button, does the train stop and they have to do a, like, an actual emergency and everybody has to get off or something? Do they, you know, is it best if there's a fight on the train to call the emergency number or to hit that button? Just curious about the protocol for discretion.
Yeah, no, obviously, you know, nothing's more important than your own personal safety. So there is a bunch of different ways you can summon the police. 911, depending where you're at, what type of cellular service you have. The cell phone does work in certain parts of the system. That's something we're improving, and you'll see better over time. The other way is the emergency intercom, which is located on every train car, at the end of every train car. If you're on a train car where the incident has happened, we encourage you to exit that train car at the next station and then report on the next rail car if you're more comfortable. That intercom goes right to the train operator, and then depending on the nature of the incident, if it's a crime in progress, you know, assault or whatever the case may be, that train operator contacts Central, and then they'll hold that train at the next station to wait for the police. It depends on the nature of the call. If it's a crime that has already happened, let's say the assault occurred, as the train pulled in, the suspect flees off the train, then they won't hold that train unless we believe there's evidentiary value on that train. And then the other way is any Metro employee can always report to a station manager, the train operator, and that's what, obviously, you can call us at, you know, our police phone number 202-962-2121 and the text tips. So there's several different ways we can do that, but again, it's always your safety is the most important. I wouldn't jeopardize your personal safety to report a crime. At that point in time, you become a good witness. You know, you can help us by, you know, giving a good physical description of the individual, you know, height, weight, skin color, tattoos, clothing, anything unique about the individual. And then when the police come there, provide that information to them. We have the ability with our camera system to take a snapshot. So if you tell us he got off the third car, we're going to pull up that camera, look for that image, and then be able to shoot that out via an email to all the police officers out on the street. So we're constantly looking for ways to technology help us, because there's only so many police officers. There's 91 rail stations. At any given time, there's hundreds of train cars in the system, hundreds of buses out in the system, and we're doing both. So anytime we can use technology, our riders, our employees, to help us crime, we're definitely taking advantage of that.
Great. Thank you. Steve.
I think the discussion we've had, you know, a number of occasions has had to do with the
Steve, is your mic on?
Is the mic on?
You're kind of quiet.
Hey, no. There's no red.
Here's the reason.
Thank you.
The discussions we've had in the past have had to do with deterrence, which is presence, and so it's good that you talked about that as being important. Is there a methodology that your unit has? Now, I'm thinking specifically about the Metro Rail. Mm-hmm. Where the presence is attempted to be magnified, given the limited number of police people that you have,
We do. We use what commonly referred to as CompStat. Basically, CompStat is a methodology where you're looking at trends, hotspots, intelligence, things that feed that data, where crime's occurring, and basically we call it cops on dots. I know Gallery Place is one of our higher crime stations. And why is that? Because it's a transfer station where four lines are intersecting there. You got two levels, the upper and lower. But part of that is a misnomer because that crime could have occurred on a train, but the victim got out of Gallery Place, reported as Gallery Place. So then you got to drill down. Is the crime really happening at Gallery Place proper, or is it happening on a train? There are certain stations where we have a police presence around the clock. Minnesota Avenue, Deanwood. There's certain stations where we know crime is more prevalent. There's certain times of the day. As school is dismissed in the afternoon, we know we're going to have a detailed Anacostia from 4 p.m. to about 6:30 p.m. tonight. I know the Capitol, so who they win tonight, but if they're back at the Verizon Center, you're going to see them there. And one thing that's upsetting, and what I hear often, not often, but sometimes from our riders is when they see the officers at Gallery, they're on the top side. I need you down on the ground, bumping tiles, and paying attention to what's going on downstairs. But the perception is those officers are congregating or goofing off, or that's the perception when you walk by them at that particular time. They could have been handing a call for service, but at that time it probably didn't, it might be. So, you know, there's certain things where it's incumbent upon us as trained police officers to be visible, you know, to spread out along the platform, not three or four of us standing at a kiosk, whatever the case may be. So I'm constantly, you know, our management team is constantly struggling with that, is making sure officers are deployed in the right spots. They're not, you know, appear to be, you know, just engaged in idle conversation and things like that. So it's something we're constantly working on to improve our performance as well as improve our visibility and visibility to the uniform presence and changing our mindset there.
Does the presence include presence on, on the trains themselves?
We are. So with that surge detail that I talked about earlier, basically is what I try to do there is the surge officers are focusing more on trains. And then the regular police officers or beat officers are paying more attention to the mezzanines and platforms. Because again, it's a method to our madness, and that's based on the crime trends and the hot spots where the crime is occurring. And then also, again, the visibility and that perception. You know, it's my job as the chief and our job as the police department to reassure riders that we do have a safe system. And sometimes it's challenging because of media and other things and events that happen. But at the end of the day, again, you look at our crime numbers, although we've seen an increase this year, our crime is still relatively low overall. When you look at how many people we traverse any given day on the bus and rail system, how many actual crimes occur.
One quick last question. Do the potential perpetrators of crimes on buses realize, as a deterrent, that there's a camera on the bus that's photographing them?
Yeah, so what we did was in October this year, on the X2 route. The X2 route has dedicated articulated buses. So it's what we did now, and we copied this out of Boston. When that customer steps on board that bus, there's a monitor, a 9x9 monitor, where they see themselves boarding. And then when they go sit down in the back of the bus, there's another 24-inch panel there that shows all six cameras actively recording on that bus. It's very preliminary, but we're seeing numbers of 30% already in the X2 coming down. So we're going to pilot that for the next 6 months, really look at the data. We're looking at, you know, how much more fare is coming in the mail, but, you know, the till there, so to speak. Is fare evasion coming down? Complaints, on-time performance, crime in general, you know. So we chose the X2 because that's one of our higher crime routes, and it's the only one with dedicated articulated buses. So we're going to try that for 6 months, and hopefully the data is going to prove worthwhile, and we'll see that eventually in all of our buses.
Thank you, sir. Let's see. Danny, do you have, and how much more time do you have?
What time is it? 6 o'clock. I got another 15 minutes.
All right, good.
Okay.
Go ahead. Denise?
Yes, mine is basically a follow-up to Steve's. At a prior meeting, you said that we were told there are about 400 security officers.
We have an authorized sworn strength of 474 officers.
So my question is, how do you decide, where to dispense the people, you know, where they should be focused? Well, so many stations, but you have so many stations, bus, rail, parking lots, and all that. So how do you decide where they should be? Is it based on the time?
It is. Yeah, it's based on crime, it's based on time of day. And to be told, we have some great partnerships with the police in the National Capital Region. But when you look at crime by jurisdiction, I'll use Virginia for example. Most of the crime that's occurring in Virginia, and we classify crime in two categories, part one and part two. Part one is your more violent offenses, but part two is your more simple offenses. So when you look at part one crime in Northern Virginia stations, it's mostly bike theft or theft from auto. So I might not put as many resources over there when I look at the District of Columbia or Prince George's County and say, man, I'm having more robberies in Prince George's County in D.C., so I'm going to put more cops over there. So it's very fluid. It changes every day. We don't have the same set number every single day. We truly follow the crime trends and patterns over the 24 hours, 48 hours, and we're looking for those trends. We're looking at the motive. You look at victimology. Is there victims more females or more males? Is it more in the afternoon or the morning? And you're constantly looking at that. We have a whole team of analysts. That's all they do all day is look at crime trends, not just in Metro, but in the region. And then we share that information across the region. I can tell you now, College Park has seen an increase in bike thefts. So we're sharing, every time they make an arrest or we make an arrest, we're sharing that data and say, hey, does this guy or gal match any of your stuff or any of our stuff? So it's a matter of information sharing, intelligence sharing in real time. It's the partnerships we have with the local law enforcement. And again, just being diligent, cops on dots and putting our resources we have, because we have applied that number. And again, using that CCTV, using that text tips, encouraging our riders to be our eyes and ears out there. Because not just crime, you always have that terrorism thing you have to worry about as well. We are the nation's capital, the second largest transit system in the United States. We're a soft target, and there's no two ways about that. So it's a matter of empowering employees, being public service campaigns or public awareness messaging and deploying our cops in the right spots.
Can I ask why is it you deploy people in couples rather than singles?
No, unlike, some police departments do that, two-man units or one-man units. Unlike most police departments, and I kind of touched on this earlier, policing in a trained environment is much different than your county police or your city police. Most county or city police rely on a cruiser to drive around, where the large majority of our department rides a train or walks a foot beat. So there's definitely different deployment strategies because it's a trained environment. But the only time we deploy extras are surges that I talked about or a special event. But most officers we patrol by ourselves.
Thank you. Bea, you had a question from the audience?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is for the chief. The public says they want to make sure that they're safe, and they have a concern about when bags are left on the trains, and they want to know exactly what's the protocol. What should they do? Should they just be outside of the train, announce it, or what should they do?
Yeah, so suspicious items are abandoned items, and there's really two classifications. An abandoned item is something that a rider left behind, whether it's underneath a train car, on a train car, maybe on top of the fare machine. And it's something that is kind of grows over time. You got to interview people to find out, well, when was the bag there? Is there any wires hanging off the bag? Is there a note on the bag? Is there a bomb threat or a threat called in before the package was left? What's going on, overseas or on the local level? So abandoned items versus suspicious package, and that's how we classify them. Is the bag in a really obscure, out-of-the-way place? Did the person leave it behind run off the train and make a overt statement? So there's a lot of things that go into that decision making. We have over 20 explosive dogs, 20 EOD dogs that have the capability of sniffing explosive devices out. We also have our own bomb squad where we can come on a scene and x-ray a package real time in a matter of minutes and deem a package safe. So we take that very seriously. You look at the events in Paris and Brussels recently. During those type of events, we'll always increase our staffing. Again, to reassure our riders that we are safe, and we have a great partnership with the FBI. We have a member assigned to the Joint Terrorism Task Force, so that intelligence is always real-time. It's coming in. It's something we rely on.
Very good. Thank you. Other questions for the chief?
She has a question here.
Oh, I'm sure. Let me just have a question. Once I was at Metro Center on the Red Line part, and a guy sat on the bench, and just was before terrorist attacks were popular. He put a package or something under him. And then he went downstairs to the Blue Line, and a friend of mine noticed that he had left his package. Now, I didn't go get the package, but I ran downstairs and found him and told him he left it, and he said thank you and went back up. So what would be the appropriate thing to do in that case in this day and age?
Yeah, I don't know if I would tell you to do anything different, to be honest with you. Because the fact that as soon as you approached me, he was thankful. And obviously, he just, his mind was in another place. I mean, we're all so busy nowadays that sometimes people do get absent-minded. I don't know if I'd tell you anything different, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Chad,
go ahead. I had something I wanted to ask, too.
My question is that recently, it was reported that bus drivers, they get more tickets than any other drivers because they don't follow the traffic laws as should, like going through the red lights and not stopping on the stop signs and speeding and all that thing. So my question is twofold. One, what is your role on that case like that? And the second thing, who pays that ticket?
Yeah, I saw the same article, and anytime, you know, a transit police officer or a bus operator committing offense like that, we're going to take the appropriate action and identify that operator and take the appropriate steps, whether it's the issuing a ticket or calling the SOM to the screen of street supervisor to the scene. As far as paying, I can't answer that question because I honestly don't know. I assume Metro pays them, but, or, you know, I know it wouldn't surprise me. I know in some cases, you know, you have the ability to track down a driver, and, you know, sometimes the driver has to pay that out of his own wallet.
Phil, did you have something?
Well, I just wanted to thank you for what has been done about contacting. We requested a couple of years ago that the Metro app actually had contact information on it, and now the Metro app does, in fact, on the bottom, have two push buttons, one for texting, one for calling, and so that's a quick and easy one for those of you that can't remember the numbers.
Thanks. One thing I wanted to say real quick, you spoke about lighting. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about actually later this month with the GM is the lighting and how it increases safety in the station. So I think the lighting project that we undertook helps in lots of ways, safety being one of them. The other thing I wanted to just mention briefly is that I know that you have, particularly in the exercise, evacuation exercise, which I assume that you participate in.
Yes.
We have individuals from Maryland Department of Disabilities, D.C. Department of Homeland Security, and Virginia Department of Disabilities who are disabled, guide dogs in some cases, I think wheelchairs in others, and are coordinating training on evacuation and safety protocol between the three D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. I think that's very useful. Hopefully you'll take advantage of their services so that we have safety protocol between the three jurisdictions that are uniform, and you've got people that really know what they're doing. They've been doing it for years.
Yeah, and that's important that we have this group participate. You know, one of our early action recommendation items that we went to the NTSB with was to have quarterly drills. So we've had two already this year. We have a third one underway. And then we're going to do a large scale with the entire region in the summer, I think in August, across the Yellow Line Bridge. So anytime we can get different communities involved, the more the merrier, because I think first responders, whether fire, EMS, or law enforcement, it's important that they have the ability to adapt accordingly. So I think it's a great idea, and I hope you all continue to support us on that.
Beautiful. Okay. Great. Any other questions for the chief?
One.
Then I think we'll close.
Okay. In item audit, and there are two aspects of independence, you know, the independence which we have to have, you know, with respect to the work. One is actual independence, and the other is the appearance of independence. And it appears that those two aspects are critical to what you do. And my question is that the way you look at it? And I say it this way. The actual would be placing police officers where the probability statistics that you work with indicate there is more prevalence of the possibility of a crime, such as the Horizon Center at certain times, Chinatown, et cetera, et cetera. The appearance, and I see it done extremely well in New York, is to have transit police just hopping the cars, walk into a car for one station, walk out of a car, walk across. I've seen it, you know.
Yes.
Is that the way you see it? I don't see that second aspect, but I certainly do see the first.
Yeah, no, and we give our officers a lot of discretion. going car to car is something that's very unique. We love it because, especially while the train's in motion and you hear that door slam, you get everybody's attention on that rail car. We encourage it sometimes, you know, during rush hour, it's not capable just because of overcrowding and things of that nature. But we're constantly challenging officers and our management team to really do that. You know, get creative, think outside of the box, because it is a perception issue, but it's the broken window theory, you know, and all of us play a role in that. It's how our officers are deployed, what do officers look like, how are they facing the public. It's the lighting we talked about. You know, I firmly support the lighting issue because it's a basic security concept. If you take care of lighting, you know, you create that, again, that perception of, I'm feeling comfortable here, I'm secure here, because of lighting so well. So lighting is something near and dear to me. I hope that over time we're going to increase that. I know we have some ideas underway, but I firmly support that because I think, again, it's creating that perception that I know this is a safe environment, and it's because I see a police officer, because I hear announcements, because there's adequate lighting, because I know how to call an employee or a police or whatever the case may be in an emergency situation. So, again, it's that multi-layer approach, really, but you know, you're right on point with it. So,
thank you, Chief. Okay, appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you coming. Thank you. Okay, I appreciate the change in schedule so the chief could speak. I think we have three other public comments.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yes, sir. And so we are going to continue with Carol Tyson, please.
Hi, everyone. Good evening. I don't have anything written, so it's just off the cuff. Hope you'll excuse that. I just wanted to build off of what Chris Burns said earlier, before the chief spoke, and support infrastructure getting addressed and accessibility increasing. There was a document that was created in October, and I think that some of the AAC members actually contributed to that. It was called a call to action. Get the full name, but we can share it at the next AAC meeting. Heidi Case definitely played a big part, and it had a list of issues that we saw as being needed to increase accessibility at WMATA, and I think the staff did receive that document, and it's been referred to a number of times, so just to put that out there. The real reason I wanted to say a few words was to ask if there's been discussion of the McKinsey report. And I know that that was actually, I think, submitted to WMATA in January, but it was just in the press in April. And I don't know if this committee has talked about that. It was a report that was done for WMATA staff, for the WMATA board. There are a number of recommendations in that report about paratransit. And specifically recommendations around alternative paratransit, similar to abilities riding, all the discussions that have been had here this year. But there are a few things that I was very concerned about. One, they provide or recommend or discuss three different models, a jurisdiction-led, WMATA-led, and a brokerage-led. And I haven't read it closely. I'm not an expert on this at all. I'd mostly love to hear from WMATA what they're thinking and if they're going to come back to this committee. I'm concerned because the brokerage-led model, it says in the report, says that it will not induce demand for alternative paratransit because customers will not be given a choice about what service they will take. So you'd call, my understanding from reading the report is you would call whoever is doing the brokering and tell them when you need to go somewhere and what time and where you're going, and they would decide what service you would get, whether or not you would take Metro Access or Uber or a taxi or one of those things. That may be a completely, I may not understand what I'm reading at all, and that's why I wanted to bring it to you and ask if anybody knows and if you're going to talk about it. They also recommend outsourcing the grandfathered in trips for folks that live outside of the ADA mandated three quarters of a mile, which also concerns me. So I just wanted to bring that. The last thing is they have a chart in there where they list out what the disability community reaction would be to the various things that they list. And I wondered if they'd come to this committee and ask you what your reaction would be. I was not looking at the time, so 4 seconds. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol. Okay, a couple of questions I had there. Paul?
Yes.
Do we have the ability to do the McKenzie report briefing discussion at a private meeting?
We can definitely put it into the work plan and see what we can do it. I can work with staff on that.
Okay, and I sort of threw this as a hot potato to Paul. What does the committee think? I think it would be relevant to talk to some of those issues. Particularly, Carol, you brought up the idea of the brokerage.
Now, also, can you give a little bit of...
Mr. Kent, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Chair. I wanted to just hopefully save the committee a little bit of trouble on that item because, the McKinsey report was published on the website because it was requested. We had alluded to it in the past that prior to the hiring of our new general manager, Mr. Wiedefeld, that the board thought that it would be good for an outside party to come in to look at Metro in various aspects and provide a bit of a blueprint for the new general manager to follow when he came in. Hopefully save him a little bit of time to address the most critical issues first. Interestingly enough, paratransit was on the list. But not for the reason that it's on the list in a lot of places. It was not related to the delivery of service. It was not a performance issue. It was actually simply a mechanism of saying, well, Mr. Wiedefeld or whoever the new GM was going to be at the time, there are ways to make Metro run more efficiently and more cost effectively. All of you have heard us talk about the need for funding, for dedicated funding for Metro, and how much it costs to maintain the rail system in particular. So anytime that we see a way that we can operate Metro generally without spending as much money, that's a good thing. So they looked at paratransit. They have, McKinsey has worked with New York City Transit previously, so Mr. Salford, I know you know a lot about the New York system. And they basically said, gosh, we have some ideas where we can really save money in this particular area. Now, what ended up happening between the time that McKinsey was engaged and now, when the report was published, is that Mr. Wiedefeld was hired. Mr. Wiedefeld has his own blueprint. Mr. Wiedefeld's blueprint started with coming to this committee twice already, as some of you have recognized. And so to Ms. Tyson's question, the consultant didn't come here to ask your opinion. We have. The staff has, and all of the discussion in the McKinsey report that was related to paratransit alternatives was all meant to be for discussion purposes. What has happened since Mr. Wiedefeld came here is he basically asked me, don't you have an RFI on the street? Aren't you discussing it with the Accessibility Advisory Committee and getting stakeholder input? And don't you already have a plan for how you were going to proceed? And I said, yes. And he said, well, is this generally consistent with what we saw in the consultant report? And I said, yes. I mean, it's not exactly what the consultant report says. It was, staff's version based on working with the AAC and from our own experience. So everything we've been working on is the direction that the project is now going. Everything that you read in the McKinsey report is the thought process that was going on prior to that discussion that we had with Mr. Wiedefeld. So it's not the latest information. You have more current information than the McKinsey report from discussions here at the AAC. So, we are happy to go back and talk to you about the way those discussions went some months ago. The bottom line is that what we've been talking to you about and the discussions we had surrounding the RFI is the most current information on what we intend to do. There's nothing in the McKinsey report that, that outside of what you heard from me and my team that is actually in the plan. A lot of it was speculative. As my friend Carol mentioned, we anticipated what the reaction of the public was. Well, we know that we actually have to get the reaction from the public before we know what the public's reaction is really going to be. So we've already done that vetting. but I'm happy to discuss any aspect of the report, but that report is not driving what we are now doing. It was actually what you saw and heard in the RFI and the discussions that we are having with you and with the community. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. So there's a lot in that report. I understand the preliminary and I understand the three modes of paratransit that were described in there. I guess I would like maybe all you can figure out if something like that would be worthwhile to be discussed at your metro access meeting. I don't know what your work plan is, and I don't know what your agenda is, and I don't want to drive the agenda from Paul. So looking for feedback from the committee as to some of the conclusions on the McKenzie report after hearing what Mr. Kemp said,
Mr. Chairman,
how would you like to go forward?
Charlie? I make a suggestion.
Yes.
Truly is on the respect of the committee and the community is not the McKenzie report, nor the RFI, but the RFP.
I understand that.
And so at this point, the McKenzie report is available for everybody to read online. Most of us, I think, have already read it. We've had at-length discussions with Mr. Kent on the RFI and it is going out. And so I think what needs to happen at this point is discussion of what is the product of the McKenzie report, the RFI discussions, and what the RFP is going to be.
Is that okay? Makes sense. That makes a certain amount of sense to me, Phil. Other people's thoughts? All right. Very good. Okay. We have another public comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We have Mr. David Hammer.
David.
Thank you. This is just merely a comment. Hi, my name is David Heller. I'm an organizer at the Amalgamated Transit Union's national headquarters. The ATU recently released a report discouraging agencies like WMATA from partnering with TNCs like Uber and Lyft to transport paratransit riders, as we've discussed for the past couple of months. The report comes after a study that the Brookings Institution did titled How Lyft and Uber Can Improve Transit Agency Budgets, pretty much said that ride-sharing companies should partner with agencies to manage the costs. The Brookings study, however, is insulting to the extent that for most of these kinds of partnerships, only as a cost-cutting measure. It dismisses labor and disability concerns as mere roadblocks, that's the term that they use. So in response to that, we released our own study on the effects of companies like Uber and Lyft getting into the paratransit business. We also, at the end of it, offer our own list of recommendations on how to improve the existing service right now to make it more safeguarded, strengthened, and improved. While our paper has a national labor focus, it highlights some of the work that the Transport, Transportation, Equity, and Accessibility Movement, aka TEAM, has done around Abilities Ride, and also uses the WMATA service area as an example of exactly how harmful these companies can be to both workers and riders in the region. A transit agency's mission is not to only improve their budgets by outsourcing their responsibilities and segregating their services to provide high quality, but to actually provide high quality service for their riders, the wages and working conditions necessary to actually retain professional career path employees, and where resources for these priorities are lacking, to advocate alongside riders and workers for more funding. I brought physical copies for anyone that would like it, and I'm happy to email a Word doc version for text-to-speech purposes for anybody that would like it. So that's my time, and thank you so much.
Thank you. I would like to see a Word document on that. I appreciate that. That would be great. Comments?
I have a question.
Can we get a Word, maybe a Word document to be? B, send it up?
Yes, sir.
Okay, perfect. Glad to hear it.
Can I ask it?
Hang on, wait a minute. Hang on. I'm going to ask comments. Bill?
I emailed that a link to the ETA this morning. 4 days ago.
Yeah. I think that...
To the entire committee.
Yeah, I think the link, for whatever reason, I couldn't open that.
I couldn't open it.
Yeah, and it might have been my access technology, or it might have been, as I call it, picnic, a problem in the chair, not in the computer. So I don't know. But it could have been user error. So anyway, I don't appreciate it worked out.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Charlie.
This is for David, is it?
David.
First of all, congratulations on the ATU analysis. I thought that was a really good paper. And the thing that I was curious about is there was a representation a few meetings ago here about taxis that actually were able to be wheelchair accessible, and the same thing could be used for regular transit as well. Sorry, I was very sensitive. So just use transit. And I think that that may well be a solution ultimately to this issue, because if we can get all vehicles accessible and also usable as just for any passenger, then the problem is solved. Do you have any comment on that?
Charlie, is this what you and I talked about yesterday?
Yeah.
That type of Yes, David.
Yeah, I mean, I would say any company that has, I would say, a more adequate supply of wheelchair accessible vehicles would be much better. The whole thing with us is we know that companies like Uber and Lyft have always had trouble being ADA compliant, and it's rather unclear how much of their fleet would actually be wheelchair accessible. And if, say, a company like Uber and Lyft was to be used, it's a much tougher picture knowing whether or not they have a certain amount of drivers that on their own have wheelchair accessible vehicles, because Uber and Lyft, they don't own any of the vehicles their drivers use. They depend, and this is where they get their profits, they depend on their drivers owning and insuring and maintaining those vehicles. So I would say a taxi service that has a guaranteed wheelchair accessible fleet would obviously be a better solution.
Very good, and thank you. I have one more public comment, if I could.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, David. One more public comment?
Yes. Hi.
Okay. Thank you all, and good evening. I've missed you for a few weeks, I think. Good to see you all again. I really, Carol mentioned call to action, and that's what I want to deliver to you all today. And, you know, we just talked about the fact that there's been some robust discussion back and forth between Mr. Kent and Mr. Blake about the Ability Ride program. But what has to happen, but that did not take place when Paul Winfield was here. And from disability advocates who have reached out to him through that email address that he allows people to communicate with him, his response is, I'm getting the kind of feedback from the disability community, I'm counting on getting that from the AAC. And so what I'm going to say as far as call to action is that discussion is not enough. That's great. There were lots of concerns addressed, brought up, brought back and forth about. But is there a document that went directly to a board and to Mr. Winfield letting him know about your concerns? I think that, you know, we have to move past discussion to actual action and recommendations. I think that is actually the intent of the AAC. I can share about all vehicles being wheelchair accessible. That they have a certain percentage here in DC. But just this last week, traveling between advocacy at the Wilson Building for a council hearing in Judiciary Square, the Taxi AAC was able to catch a wheelchair accessible cab that had stopped letting out two well-dressed businessmen. But they refused me service. They said, oh, the ramp doesn't work, so I can't serve you. Now, legally, they shouldn't be out on the street at that. But the point is, just having a wheelchair accessible cab on the road does not ensure me service. And it did not that day. So this Ability Rides program, you know, some of your concerns about all the people with disabilities who A, don't have smartphones and B, don't have credit cards, those are the people I serve in my job for Project Action. And they simply will not be able to use that service. Where exactly are all the wheelchair accessible vans going to come from, particularly in PG County? How are we going to ensure? I think I would love to encourage and ask you all to, even if that takes a working group meeting, to sit down and put that in writing and send a letter. Because without it, we're counting on you, those of us who aren't on the AAC. And I did make that choice, but other people besides me are counting on you all to be our voice and ensure that once that, because once the RFP comes out, that isn't going to be a time to edit it. I would ask that they bring back, after they've evaluated all the information from the RFI, what did they glean from it? What does that suggest for them moving forward in the RFP before it happens? Once it happens, I think your voices, power will be lost. And please, please, you know, make sure that you follow this up with action and ensure that everybody else, and in particular, because Metro's going to pay for this, and that we actually, increases the requirement in my mind that it must be equitable for all.
Thank you, Matt. Very good. Okay. Thank you for that. I think we might be able to have a discussion on that, particularly the with respect to the RFI. I think there's good things to talk about. Yes, Bill.
Just to add that I've been away for quite a while. Something I've been following with these meetings on Scrooger is we seem to have forgotten our golden rule of if you want anything to happen, somebody needs to make a motion. The point you made is a very good one about discussion. Discussion is really nice, and nothing happens after discussion is over unless we make a motion. And then after the motion is made and passed, it has to be passed on and then followed up on. If we make a motion in October, it behooves us to find out in November, December, and January what's happened in response to that. And when something good has happened, then we need to make a motion complimenting them. If nothing has happened, we need to make a motion saying, why hasn't something happened? So it's just a reminder to the committee, because I haven't been around to bug you for the last couple of months.
Yes. So, thoughts, Phil, on that? Do you have any ideas? I will say that at the board meetings, making sure that the alternative paratransit system meets ADA requirements has been something that I've been saying for the last few months. Now, I know that's the sentiment of this committee. There's been a lot of discussion. There has been a lot of issues that have gone into the RFI that individual committee members have put together, that have been a conglomeration of a lot of thought from a lot of other groups. And input to a lot of groups. I'd like to be able to, maybe at the chairman's staff for holding new business, we can talk about what next steps with respect to the RFI coming out, whether it be a conference or vendor bid process or something that we can have further input into. I think there's been an awful lot put into the RFI. Certainly over the last 5 months, we've had a lot of discussion.
A lot of things that we have discussed. Heidi has made a good point. We have gone back and forth. We have testified at the meetings. We have expressed, but we're still at the same spot. The things that we've been talking about, the app and phone accessibility, we're not going to have. We've already been told that, and we've already been told it's not going to be door-to-door. So when you say ADA, meet ADA, those aren't things that ADA says. There are other things that we need, and they're not going to be met. And like you said, once it's done, it's done.
I don't, okay. Not sure I quite agree with the once it's done, since I've seen contracts modified before. Number two, until I see something in writing, I don't see anything being done. And number three, I would like to see those things happen. Are we going to get...
What is writing? I make a motion.
Okay.
I make a motion that we put in writing the things that we really want done in writing. We have said them, but let's put them in writing and present it to the board.
All right. Hang on. You have a motion on the floor.
I'd like you to expand and say what those things are. Put them in motion.
I'd like to put in the language of that motion.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
I agree with Heidi, and we should have definitely a motion. Because we have discussed so much about disability rights issues, but it's all in the minutes, but it has not put in a concrete action form. To follow up with Dennis's motion, I'd like to add something there. The motion should be to move the AAC, put together a list of concerns and recommendations in a letter to the board and general manager on ability rights.
All right.
A list.
A bulleted list of requirements.
Yes,
you're saying?
And recommendations.
Recommendations. All right.
That we have put together and then goes to the GM and to the board.
Very good. Okay.
Phil,
did you have a question?
Yeah, I think a motion has to include who's going to do it and when they're going to do it. I think it's something that needs to have a time limit on it, that we have this done by the next central access meeting.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the problem is the meeting is going to be at the call center. So it's going to be a closed meeting, so it's...
We're not saying at the Metro access meeting. We're
but
saying
by the time.
All right. So we have...
Is that okay, Dennis?
And then who's going to do it?
Who's going to do the work? Staff, you want
to try to the staff to be involved in this too.
No.
Mr. Chair,
this is our motion. We're not going to get the staff to do
it. You make the motion?
Hang on. Tony's got the floor.
Half the minutes over the past 5 months, I have not been only one of the Metro Access subcommittees. Have they reflected the primary concerns so that one could easily cultivate the primary issues?
Yes.
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 Yes, Tony, thank you. Who, so we know where the information is?
Yes.
Beneath you, Doris? Who else for the floor?
Yes.
Doris, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that you came in. Doris, go ahead.
The AAC, and I have a couple of questions because I'm not sure when I was here when the first motion was, if there was a first motion, was framed. But so that's my first question is what you proposed, Dr. Banerjee, a substitute motion?
Yes, I proposed to move a motion from the AAC.
So there is no motion before
the motion. Is there a motion on the
floor? So you have a
second yet?
Yeah.
Is there a second?
Denise propose a motion.
Yes.
And then I asked the question, and Tappan had something to add to it, but we haven't had a common motion and a second yet. Right. So it's still wordsmithing the motion.
Okay. So. I am prepared to second the motion with the friendly amendment of the words that are documented in meeting minutes of the past 5 months, if that is the time, or the last 6 months, or whatever the actual time frame is. I think it was January, but it's pretty much before. And then, and I want to add the words, and other documentation as appropriate, because there have been emails back and forth and such on this subject. And so having accepted it, if the second, I mean, having made the second, and if my friendly amendment is adopted by the neighbor, then I would ask for one further clarification on what I heard, because somebody made me special comments about this issue just when I was coming in, and used the words, somebody used the words request for information, which is what I understand just previously went out. And so actually, are we trying to raise some issues vis-a-vis a RFP or RFQ of some kind?
Okay. Doris, are we trying to raise issues on what?
RFP.
RFP? No.
No, are we going ahead with an RFP? That's what I'm asking.
Well, okay, but then, hang on. We have, first, let's see, we have the motion on the floor. And you accept, do you accept Doris's addition as friendly? Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
But you're right, sure. I'll just say, like, someone, I can get the whole thing.
Go ahead, okay. So we have a motion on the floor.
Hasn't seconded it.
And Doris seconded it. Yeah, Doris has seconded it.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Is there any other discussion on the motion?
Right. So my point of information, having seconded the motion and before we vote, is are we voting on a list of issues and concerns and whatever else that will go forward to the board in relationship to an RFP or an RFQ that is about to be developed or is developed versus the language that was used here, RFI?
Well, since the RFI is closed,
yeah,
then it would be additional information that we would give to the board.
Well, in relationship to any RFP,
right,
that is issued.
Right.
That's so what that's the only clarification.
Right. If the RFI is closed, then that would be where that additional information could go.
If I could simplify it for my couple of neurons that weren't following all this that went on, what we want is a list of what this community would want to appear in a request for proposal applications or quotes, such as door-to-door pickup, telephone availability, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I would add that to the motion, but I just want to clarify that that's what I believe that Ms. Rush and Taffens want, that we want to put forward to the board before the RFP, RFA, RFQ get written, we say what the minimum standard should be for the disability community.
And that's what I was trying to clarify.
Got it.
All right.
Everyone's got
any
it.
Other?
Thank you.
Okay. Any more discussion?
Yes.
Charlie, I'm going to go to Charlie first. Who was that next?
Charlie B.
Okay, let me go to Charlie, and then I need to go to B because we need to jump to administration. Charlie.
I'm enthusiastically supportive of the notion of having a motion that instructs us to advise, and I use that word, advise, to advise, Metro on what it is that we believe ought to happen with regard to this program. I am also just wanting to make sure that we all understand that we may want it and it may be right, and it actually may be unlawful in some circumstances for it not to happen. But the ultimate decision is going to be up to Nevada, and we need to make sure in our recommendations that we give them something that they can work with. In other words, give somebody something they can say yes to, and there's a greater likelihood to say yes. If you give them something they can't say yes to in a million years, well, I've been wasting a lot of time. So, anyway, that's...
Thank you, Charlie. And who else?
Carol.
Carol, go ahead. And then I think we want to call this, have a vote on this.
going around and around left turn. I think that we all know that we want the door-to-door, or something similar to that, as close to it as possible. I think we all know that what happened to Heidi can happen to a lot of us. So we need some sort of ruling or something. I think we've been over it, under it, now let's do it. I just think that there are some things that we should have, and I'm going to end it by saying this. I was on the subway with a lady today that had no business on the subway, and she hadn't had any travel training or anything, and she could not manipulate, nor could I, you know, the subway near here. It's dangerous for anybody, but it's not to any, you know, it just wasn't thought about. So I think we need to think about things long and hard, and I think we've thought about this before. So let's make a motion, set the committee to task, and what can happen is that we can go back and look at what we've asked for in the past. It's been the same thing. And let's do it.
Okay. We have a motion on the floor. We have a second. We've had a bunch of discussion.
Mr. Chair, before you go to discussion, I want to add one comment from the public. The public says, after staff analysis or responses to RFI, the draft RFP should be presented to the AAC for comment.
Very good.
Please note, wait. Please note, there is actually already a motion adopted because I offered it at an earlier meeting. So I think it would be reiterating that we have already requested to see the RFP or whatever.
Yes.
Okay. But I think we want to see the draft RFP. Once it's an RFP, it's too late.
Yeah. No, that's what that
we can request to see the draft RFP. All those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And those abstaining? Okay, the motion passes. Now, who is going to chair this wonderful little group that's going to get this document done a week and a half? Do I have volunteers?
Oh, why don't you chair it? And I'll work with you. Why don't you do that?
I guess I've been
drafted. Yeah. All right, thank you, Paul.
So the answer is
who's working temp? Do you have an interest?
I'm working with Carol.
Denise. Okay, Carol. All right.
I would be there.
Good, okay. We have a working group. Excellent, good. Thank you, everybody.
And a time limit.
And a time limit. And someone to hold responsible.
Oh. Very much.
And you know, Bill, I'm sorry, hang on. Let me close last. Bill, you've been very patient. You asked for the floor, I think, about 8 speakers ago, so I apologize for that.
I'm sorry. Well, I almost forgot about it. I'm glad to this year. I want to say thanks to Mother, because I've seen the new kids at the... at the end of the stations, usually when you come out in the elevator, where there were no kids before. So this is very helpful. I'm going to admit that it's not only good for the information to see, but it's also good because it gives some life to those corners, which usually are very desolate. Actually, they can scare. So if there's reason to look there, and the reason for people to look there, that's a good thing.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for being patient.
Mr. Chair, yes. So I might add, Bill, there's a series of experimental PIDs that are being put out now that add another line to the bottom. So we will no longer have to look at all the stations with elevator outages and not know what the next turn is.
Yeah, these particular, these were, there's one at Judiciary Square and there's one at Boston in particular. And they're flat screen displays, they're not LED displays. They're flat screen and they display all the information in white on black background, except for the train color that's superimposed over the white
tree name, their name comes in the colored block on the black background, which I think is, it's very good to see these trees.
Good. I'd be able to see so good, Jill. I wish I could. Very good, thank you.
Do you make a verbal question?
Good, I'm sure we need that. Yeah, one question. Me?
Yes, Mr.
I'll click any time. We're going to administrative items.
Okay, this is just, the first item we have on the list is the AAC tour. It's at the Metro Access Customer Service Center. That's going to be at the PG Plaza location. This goes to the public comment that asked about the MAC subcommittee meeting and why was it at the call center and why is it members only? Well, it is a meeting that they're going to have, and it's only open to members to actually tour the AAC, tour the Metro Access Operations Call Center. It's been on the Metro Access Subcommittee's work plan for probably a little over a year now, just kind of getting pushed around, but that one is only open for members. What will happen is that the meeting in June, members will come back and share their findings at the meeting of what they discussed or found or issues and stuff. So that's where the members will be.
Ms. B?
Yes.
I have a comment.
Okay.
I've already tried to attempt to apply to employer, and I don't have much time yet. I was trying to inquire at the station. I told them that I needed to go to PG Plaza to do the prestige fingerprint, and they were like, I'm not gonna book it.
You're having difficulty booking a trip to the call center?
Yeah, and I know part of that was because of the time. I get that, because you've been on the call center and need that. But I literally got people that reservation and said, like, we're not going to book it, even though I said PG Plaza. And I gave them the exact name. They refused to book it, even though I said, I'm on the AC, and it's because there's a bit of a notification line. You need an exact address and street name and all that stuff, which is fine. My problem is I don't have it. And like I said, I knew it wasn't time yet. I was just doing it to see you.
Okay, well, what I will do is in a follow-up email, share the exact address so that those individuals using the paratransit service can book their trips to there. And then the individuals that are interested in coming on the fixed route system, you would come to the PG Plaza Metro Rail Station. When you exit the station, we'll have shuttle services provided by the Atlantic Bus Service, and then that will take those fixed route members to and from the meeting. Any member interested or needing accommodations for the tour needs to let me know immediately.
Can you put me on your list, please?
For an accommodation?
For possibly, because if I call there and they're like, we're not going to book it.
I don't think you should have a problem with booking the trip. I just caught the eye of the director, Mr. Omari June, and he indicated that members shouldn't have a problem. It should be A-okay with booking to that. But any member having an issue with booking, just either give me a call or shoot me an email so that we can make sure we get you listed time and up there and back. Yes, Doris.
Just to clarify about accommodations, so I need some information. So is it just going to be a tour where we're walking around, or is there, are we going to some space over there and then actually convening the meeting?
Well, we will have a small time in a space. There will be an overview of the center, all the different features that I guess you'll be seeing there in the tour, and then we'll go on the tour.
Mr. Chair, as someone who's been there many, many times, I recommend anyone with any mobility issues take Metro Access. because the train station is an elevated station, and quite often the elevators don't work. So, plus if they do work, they let you out close to the PG Mall, and there's a lot of traffic and some tough intersections across, and so it's recommended that if you do have any sort of mobility issue, that you take Metro Access to get there.
But that is also, thank you, Phil, while we are having the shuttle service for those individuals that are needing shuttle service if they're on a fixed route system, because we do recognize that East-West Highway can be pretty busy.
Right, but they still have to get down from the elevated track.
The elevator?
Not all.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Yes, so we'll do that. That's the first thing. The next thing is the AAC meeting schedule, sir.
Yes.
We want to make sure the AAC is in line with the board, and therefore there will be no August meeting of the AAC.
Yeah.
That will keep us in line with what the board is doing.
Right.
And so we'll have a month where we won't have it, and then we'll come back in September.
Could you clarify for me, is the board meeting for May? Is that still on?
You're talking about whether the board will have its normal board meeting?
Yes.
I will have to get the actual date for that if that's the case. It's my understanding that in the last board meeting there was a comment about a change of schedule.
The 14th.
The 14th actually is a committee meeting day.
The 14th is what I did to do at the very last minute.
Thursday, the RAC is going to have their finance subcommittee and the customer service subcommittee meeting at, I think it's at 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock, or 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 5:30, 6:30. And so since we have a lot of overlap with our finance committee and our customer service people, it might be worth having somebody drop off.
I mean, is it this Thursday?
My question is that if this tour is going to be on May 16th, am I correct?
The tour, AAC tour?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and it's for the only committee members.
It is only open to AAC members.
There's no public comments.
This is a tour and it's only open to AAC members.
And the meeting?
Yeah.
We'll be having the meeting there too.
Yes.
Okay. So there's no public comments.
I'll be addressing that during my public comments.
You have to.
People know that because the problem is if they don't know it,
thank you.
Thank
well,
you.
We,
I'm interested in my
Okay. It is on the 6060 line, so the AEC hotline does note that information, and it's also on our meeting notice that that information is going to be there, but we'll definitely tell customer service to add that to their information and possibly seat drops, Mr. Jim.
Well, I was going to, might as well do it now. I was going to propose a motion to Mr. Jim and have his team, at least a week on the IVR, let customers know that the meeting will be closed, somehow close to the public, and so many words to address that.
So that's a motion, Paul?
Yeah, my motion would be at least a week before the IVR, remind Max customers via the IVR that their the May Max meeting is will be closed to the public and will not be at the JGB.
So you're referring to this executive session?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, how are you going to work that?
Okay. Executive session and, okay, do I have a second?
Second.
Good. Any discussion? Okay, hang on. Wait a minute. Hang on. Doris?
Can people please slow down?
Okay, come on.
It's really hard for the interpreter, so people can slow
down. Okay, Doris, and then Mr. Kent. And I need to move on here, so let's see if we can wrap some of this up. Go ahead.
Question about the motion for clarification. And when you say when the referendum committee discusses the IVR, okay? Wait, when you say that, are you meaning that there is actually going to be an item coming up in the next couple of either weeks or months that is specifically related to the IVR system?
Oh, no, no, no. This is just to remind customers about the next meeting that it will not be held here and in the meeting.
Oh, the next one. Session. Okay. So
Randy is asking that we slow down. Yeah, we're all ready to go. We want Randy to follow all this discussion. Okay. I think we have the IVR situation straightened out. Randy, thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. We get excited here and get carried away, I think, sometimes. Mr. Kent.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a short suggestion. I think it might be better to simply have the subcommittee say that they're not going to convene at their normal they're not going to convene the normal meeting on that date, rather than to say that there is a variety of an AAC meeting that isn't open to the public. That might confuse people because your meetings are all open to the public. I'm not aware of an executive session piece for it. I mean, I think you do have working groups, but if you just simply say that you're not going to convene, you know, then the important part is people who are guests in the meeting wanted to come, you know, members of the public who just wanted to make comments, won't come to the building needlessly that day. That's
all right. So we'll accept that friendly amendment then.
All right. So, Paul.
Yes.
We have an amendment on the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed and those abstain. Thank you, Paul. B, let me jump back to B for a second. Anything else, B?
Just one final comment about work plans. We'll be looking at work plans coming up for both subcommittees. So at the meeting, the upcoming BRS meeting and the June Metro Access subcommittee meeting, we need to be working on work plans for the new fiscal year. I also want to remind all members that the bus station lighting work group will meet immediately following the BRS meeting next week as well. That's all, sir.
Thank you, Dean. And if you could chat with me for a second.
Yes.
Let me recognize Paul to go to Metro Access Subcommittee.
Mr. Chair, just before you do that, since we've been told there's no AAC meeting in August, and we always have a really hard time getting time for our working groups to meet, August might be time for working groups to meet. Just a thought.
We'll be convening. mean nothing of the AAC during those months.
Hang on, alright, so, go ahead, Paul. At the last winter access subcommittee meeting, we talked about, let's see, CECO, incident statistics presentations done by Mr. Scruggs, both visual and description of, importance and statistics on high awareness, and the lap belt, and the waivers, and the effects of wearing them and not wearing them. It was very thoroughly well done. Then there came comments from the committee about the seat belt statistics presentation, and he quite thoroughly answered them. The other big thing was a lot of committee members had questions about the status of the IVR system being down, and particularly calling into reservations to make reservations and the difficulty to do so. So, Mr. Jim, what is the status of that since then?
Yes, our phone system is currently fully functional, and we should be, we're working to mitigate the issue that actually caused this, and we're close to completely redesigning that particular portion so that we won't face this particular issue again. But currently, the phone system is fully functional.
All right. And pretty much that was the whole meeting, and they were meeting at the Metraxas Operations Center, and I already in ahead of time resolved the issue of letting customers know, addressing that issue in terms of that meeting date, so that's already been done.
Thank you, Paul. Other
questions?
I'm a resident, did you have a question?
Thank you for your comment. That I'm sure you guys are working on it. I'm not sitting at all. But actually, yesterday morning, I called in at 8 o'clock, and at 8 o'clock, and what it did was, the IVR rain is sitting up. She wanted your reservation, and it said it was 15, and then it rained twice, disconnected me, so I hung up, did it again, same thing, disconnected me, so I hung up, did it again. Then I finally went through. So I asked you to say, all of you, I'm not telling you that you live in this, that it's fully up, that it's not fully up, because I'm having to call your office going, I can't make a ride because, yeah, they'll be calling from God, and then it says they're sleeping, and then it means sleep, and disconnect. That's not.
Well, excuse me, he said it's currently working, and it might be currently working now, but it's not consistent. It's disconnecting. You have to keep calling back. You cannot get through. It's catch hands. And you just have to be patient and keep calling.
Okay, that's what I'm feeling like he's doing.
Yeah, it is not consistent. It's not calling at night. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. It's just whatever you know.
I haven't been called at night for like 2 weeks now.
All right.
Okay.
Mr. Jim, you want to respond?
Sure. And thank you, Mr. Rushett. What I was saying is it is currently fully functional. And as I stated, the underlying issue that has caused some of the intermittent problems that we've seen, we are addressing that, and that will be fixed very shortly. And those intermittent issues should be resolved at that time. But it is currently fully functional. And we're working, like I said, to resolve that particular concern. And it should be resolved here quickly, and we should not see any more of these intermittent issues where you may have to call back after you call in. What's your question?
Marissa? Hang on. Yes, as you called several times today, absolutely continue to call. We welcome the calls. We do want to know the information when we do have those situations occur. But yes, please continue to call in and report any concerns that you have.
Got it.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Marissa. Okay, I wanted to go back to Denise and see if you had any other follow-ups, Denise.
Well, the other thing is that we've talked about this for a couple of meetings, and like you said, it may be currently working right now, but when you get home or in the middle, you know, in the morning, I leave at 4, it's not working. It just is not consistently working. That's all I want to say. It may be currently working, but we would like it to consistently work.
And good. Do we have a, I guess I'm looking for a date by which we think it will consistently work? Right, what Denise is asking, Mr. Chairman. Can you give me a date?
Yes, sir. We're looking within the next couple of weeks to be able to resolve permanently this particular concern, and we'll definitely be able to report back by the next MATS AAC meeting that will be there on site with the information, the latest up-to-date information as it relates to the bonuses.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thank you very much for that. All right. Doris, I'm going to go to you, and then I'm going to go to bus rail. Thank you.
Just a question about whether the problem with the IDR, whether it affects calls that are made via video phone relay or even, you know, text for PGY. Are you aware of any problems there?
We're not specifically aware of any issues with those particular type of calls, but if there are intermittent issues with the phone system, then there is a possibility that those type of calls will be impacted as well. I will remind the committee that when we have had these concerns, outside of one instance in the last few months, where for a short period of time, you are still able to reach a live individual. You're just not able to go through the prompts on the IVR, but you still can reach a live individual when you call in if it connects properly. But like I said, we've been really working. It's a very complicated phone issue that we're working through, and we expect to have it fixed within the next couple of weeks, and we'll report out for sure at the next MAC subcommittee meeting.
Yes, thank you,
sir. So I would request that you check into that maybe with Jeff Consumers or put in a notice out that says, you know, figure out the problems and all this stuff.
Well, if we're getting disconnected, we're not getting a lot in 50. We're not getting the day off.
Right. No, but you're misunderstanding. Well, I just, the deaf community may not be voicing its. And problems that it has, and I just want to make sure that they know that there's an investigation going on. So that's and that
thank you. Okay, thank you. Charlie, I want to jump the bus rail.
I know that I have to comment on something I brought up last night.
Go ahead, sir.
I actually want to compliment Metro Access for having responded to my question about getting more time to put in the numbers when you increase your smart card contribution. And I did get a call from Metro Access. They did say that they worked on that, and I should try it. And if I have a problem, let them know. Fortunately, I'm not in a position right now to have to worry about it. But when I do my next entry, I'll let you know whether I'm
Charlie?
Yes.
My account is a little bit low. If you'd like to add money to my account, I would certainly love for you to practice. Very good. Roger, can you give us an update on bus rail?
Figured Tom wasn't going to do that.
Bill actually pointed to you and said, Roger,
tell him Bill to do it.
I didn't get an email.
It's a good one.
She had that in the meeting. It's in the.
You're not on the right.
All right, so I guess I'll do it. So Bill, to help me?
Well, I'm not there.
All right, well, I guess we'll just say that we briefly discussed about, we had a moment of silence last week, last committee meeting about remember And then Mr. Stevens, what about the, basically talk about the way he got the, I guess regarding responses to complaints from Twitter and all these different social media. And then we also mentioned about PIDs in the pilot program, where our Chief Sante came and talked about that, about a new pilot program to reduce the overcrowding and congestion near and around the PIDs.
And just to add to this, it's an update from that meeting, and the committee actually did pass a motion without Phil being here. So you did make a motion, if you remember, and we were going to change the color of the eight-car trains to red, and the AAC said no. Red is like a color for stop or bad news or things like that, and you recommended green. And I just want to give you an update. We and our staff and the colleagues, chief and others, we went back, we listened to you, and the PIDs, when you see the change, the eight-car trains will be highlighted in green. So we listened to you, we made a motion, and we kept going. It's going to be a good day.
Okay, and then we talked.
That's good action.
And then we went over the Lost and Found program with Mr. Franklin. Maybe we can talk about the Lost and Found program overall and what some of the most common items were that were being like lost and stolen. And then basically, yes, of course, you have a question.
I would also like to add that.
Do you have a question?
Yeah.
Hang on. Wait a minute. Hang on, Roger. Bill?
Bill, yes.
Let Bill go first.
In the discussion, part of the new PIDs that Mr. Saunders was talking about, part of the motivation was to reduce crowding on the platforms.
Right.
To expand information. So they are doing that with PIDs. New PIDs, and they were also doing that with a very low-tech, but I believe effective solution of painting on the platforms where the six-car chain ends. So you can see on the platform, you can see where the end is on the platform. Because as we know, people often end up waiting for a six-car. Waiting for an eight car, when there's a six car change, they all rush forward, or they've got nowhere to go. Or people end up not going down to the eight car end because they know they're not going to get down there if it's a six car. And most of them are six cars, so I believe this is very helpful.
Thank you, Bill.
Oh,
hang on, let me go to George first, and then I need to go to Melver and then to Phil. Roger, is that okay?
Yes.
George,
go
ahead. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note with some concern that, and I wasn't able to be at that meeting, that I'm glad that you changed the color from red, but that green, unfortunately, is also a kind of dicey color, and there are many, many people who have red-green color blindness, and that all that only appears gray to them, so that's my concern that actually blue or something like that might be a better color.
Thank you, Doris. Albert, may I go to Albert next, and then Phil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure really what is the solution or the work in progress in terms of having the six cars trains and have the signage on the ground saying, okay, the last car stops here, and nobody sees the sign on the ground. Absolutely nobody sees that. and there is a really a mess, a really mess in everything. In for instance, in Grand Gary Place and the town. So I really suggest that it should be something differently to let people know that there is only a train with six cars, and when you are coming from the lower level, going upstairs to take the train going to Shady Grove or vice versa, there should be a different kind of signage to let people know, hey, you have to move to the middle of the platform or towards the first cars because no car is coming to the next train. People do not know that, number one. Second, people on wheelchairs and scooters, they are blocking folks, riders, they are blocking that area all the time because they are waiting to jump onto the train and people is getting out of the train. So that, the last car and at the end, is just a mess. All the time in Chinatown is a mess. So the sign is on the ground, it really is not working. And I don't know if perhaps we can suggest better ideas for how to operate that because I don't know how long the six car train is going to continue. But definitely that is not working. People should to keep the right to exit or to enter or to walk all the time. It is just a mess. So it's just a thought to move forward in different direction.
Same comment, in a little different way, and that is, even if you could see it, if you're blind, you don't know what it is. And clearly it can't be in raised print or in braille because you're not going to get down on hands and knees and try to figure out what it is. But I use Gallery Place all the time, and when you come in from here at Gallery Place, it's a long way to get down there, and the last car, if it's a six-car train, it's about 100 yards down the platform. So it's really nice to have something up here so you know where it is and how far down you have to go. Same thing is true at Boston, to know where you have to go. But I think you need to have something that is usable for the vision community as well as for everybody else so that you know it's there. Good idea, but...
They will take that. Maybe they'll take that up at Bus Rail and get a recommendation from Bus Rail on that. Okay. Roger, any other questions for Roger? Or Bill?
I think Doris does.
Go ahead, Doris.
This is very short. Also, what Dr. Posner brought up, I think, is also very critical and time-worn. And at Union Station.
Okay. Thank you. Roger, was there anything else, Bill? Anything else on Bus Rail? Do you have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All those in favor. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed, be adjourned. Thank you very much. Thank you.